This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Music is a diverse form of art. From singer-songwriters to metal to electronic future funk, there seems to be a subgenre of music for everyone. Though many don't give it the attention it deserves, the KL music scene is full of talented musicians from different genres, each filling their own niche. On this episode of I Love KL, we take a look at the capital's burgeoning, diverse music scene and speak to three very different musicians with very different beginnings. Up first, singer-songwriters.
On your mind more than you have me already. I'm finding impatience as cold as summer's lie is painting this city with color. I need not look farther than you. Oh, you.
Singer-songwriters are big in the music scene, with acts like Ed Sheeran and John Mayer putting out hit singles with nothing but their voice and their guitars. The genre's a popular one. Kristen Palencia, also known as The Last One Awake, is one such singer-songwriter based right here in KL. With his individual brand of folk songs, which he labels storyteller music, the 23-year-old musician can be seen around the country playing at gigs. Sometimes with a band, but always with a guitar, The Last One Awake pours his heart out on stage, which is just what a good singer-songwriter does. Mikhail Hanafi sat down with him as he told us how he built his career up and how he got to where he is today.
So tell us a bit about yourself. How did you get started with music?
How did I get started with music? It started, I think, in a very, very big hall when I was 4 years old. My parents had entered me into a contest or something, and I was playing like Backstreet Boys, and everybody seemed to like it. And that's when I started the whole music thing.
Did you perform in school?
I did as well. Actually, I won a few competitions in school, actually with the same song for 3 years in a row. It was Michael Blue's Sway. And every year, the parents would make me enter the competition with the same song, and I'll be playing it over and over again. But yeah, that's practically how I started.
You started out doing competitions, and you performed in school. And I think you also did IU Days and Proms, right?
Yeah.
Did you also do open mics?
Yes, I did. When I decided to leave the minus one corporate route of this little jazz singer who sang Michael Bublé every day, I started at Feedback Open Mic 6 years ago when it was launched. That was when I was in my punk rock mode, and I performed for a huge amount of people who used to go, mainly musicians. I did open mics for a good year and a half, and then met a lot of friends, created a band, and now I have a plethora of musicians playing for me, yeah.
Do you think open micing helped you to build like your audience, especially initially at the start?
I think I would agree that it did. However, if you stay in the same scene for too long, you kind of stay there, and people will view you as the person that they can see all the time.
Right.
So to move forward from the open mic scene, I started creating my own events.
Do you think open micing is still like a viable way to build an audience or even get noticed because of, you know, how saturated the market is with the number of singer-songwriters and just musicians in general?
I think open micing is a start. A lot of people who do open mics don't do the original stuff that I've seen. Don't do the original stuff. They do covers and eventually start to build their repertoire and do the original stuff. I think it's a rite of passage. I suggest it to every songwriter or budding musician who I hang out with or I meet on a random basis.
And you've been featured on newspapers like The Star. When did you realize that you were starting to get attention?
I started only realizing that I was gaining some form of traction when the gigs started piling in. I think it's a matter of the equation of marketing equals business. And therefore, suddenly all of this happened and I had to slowly go from writing new songs every single day into a marketeer and trying to make a business out of this. You reach that age where you just need to put food on the table, help your parents retire, and that was a huge boost when I realized that all the business was just coming in out of nowhere.
So, you know, on that note, musicians need to get money. You can't just play and not get any money because it is a career. What do you think about people playing just for exposure? Like, is that essentially what open mics are for, or are they the first step in the ladder to a career?
I think that different types of performances give you the right type of return. If open mics gives you, it doesn't just give you the exposure that you want from an audience, it gives you more of a connection between the musicians that who are also performing. I think that's the benefit of doing open mics. In terms of playing for free, I would lie to say that I've never done it, but I have really early in my career, because when you're 13 or 14 and you really want the gig, I went to a prom and I had to pay a specific amount to play for a prom.
Wow.
So we were like, oh, okay, we did not know this. So we left, and then they called us and said, oh, we're so sorry, we didn't mean to impose that kind of thing on you. I think this really spoils the market. Everybody knows that. It's hard to say no when the gig's exposure is so good. But I think we can encourage each other in both a client and musician point of view that we all need to sort of put a standard, because this is how we cari makan. I don't think it's fair, but you have to make your own choices. I think you should choose your free gigs very, 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 very extremely carefully.
Yeah, generally, open mics don't pay the performers, but sometimes they do get like a cut of the tips from the audience members. Would you recommend someone to play different open mics every day or every other day to, you know, to get a steady source of income, or is there a better way to do it?
I think you should, if you are serious about this music thing and you've made that decision, right? This is what you're going to do. I think you have to look at it from business perspective from the start, right? You can do open mics. That's great. Do it once every 2 weeks, once every week. But the rest of your days should be spent either practicing or doing gigs and treating yourself as a musician with respect. You should tell the people who are hiring you to play that, hey, I'm a musician. I want to do this for the rest of my life. I can't buy more equipment. I can't produce a song in a studio. I can't feed my family if I don't get some source of income.
Yeah.
So just that respect between the people who hire you and yourself as a musician, just get that down. I recommend that you perform as much as you can when you start out. As much as you can. Do an Ed Sheeran. Perform 360-something performances within a year. And yeah, and just focus on that. But treat yourself with some respect as well.
So do you still open mic?
I do. I enjoy it so much. Sometimes I go down to places like Bangsar, go back to feedback. I recently just did an open mic just to sort of give back to the musicians that have been supporting you and sort of to do something spontaneous. Like if you see two of your musician friends and you've never done something before, just call them up on stage. And that's fun, you know? That's when you have some fun as a musician, apart from when you're practicing. That's a lot of fun as well. I think that every musician should do an open mic once in a while. It's just let yourself go a little bit, you know?
So the typical dream of the open micer is to do an open mic and have an A&R representative or someone from a record label in the audience and notice them and sign them. Did that happen to you?
Actually, when I started open micing, I stopped looking for those kind of opportunities already. I only had that sort of mindset when I was a kid, like sort of 13, maybe 10 years old when I first started writing songs. I was like, okay, I'm going to get a label and they're going to fund me. But I really just enjoyed these past like 4 years of creating this album of, you know, working in coffee shops for pennies and working in branding and corporate stuff just to make enough money to go over to Australia and produce my own stuff. I won't put it out there that I would say no to a label. I won't also put it out there that I say yes. However, when people look into signing, I suggest you guys look into what you actually want to do as a musician. A lot of my musician friends don't actually want the fame, and they're not just saying it, they genuinely mean it. But a label's a great push.
So is it a myth, the whole being found thing? Or do you know someone who has been found through
open mic? I know many, many people who have been found. The people who I started with 6 years ago in open mics have been signed. And they're doing wonders. They're doing amazing at this music thing. A lot of us other musicians who share my mindset are more focused on towards practicing and trying to, you know, achieve a certain level of musicianship, especially with people like Jacob Collier popping out of nowhere. You're like, oh, I'm so far behind. So we focus on that. But, you know, if a label comes by and says, hey, we want to produce you, why not?
Right. So record labels like are great for musicians in terms of marketing and like just getting the music out there. But you're not signed. How do you get your music heard? How do you do the marketing? How do you do all that side of the business?
Like I said, it was a lot of small jobs and a lot of sacrifice and hours in your day to just do, to build sort of connections. And I did branding and I worked as a barista. So most of the cafes and most of the people I work with have been pushing my music for me. Also, social media has been a good push with the right targeting, with the right marketing, and also a lot of radio stations. And a lot of newspapers like to cover me, and it's great.
Yeah. So another way to get your music heard is also to get it on Spotify and iTunes, right?
Yeah.
But when you released your album, you only put your album online a few months after the initial release. Why did you go about that way?
Technically, I was in Australia, and I was focusing on pushing my market in Australia. And then I had Malaysian fans going, hey, we didn't get to come for the launch. Where can we get the album? And what about us? And I was like, okay, I'm so sorry. Let me put it on Spotify. If you guys like it on Spotify, and if you guys follow, and if you guys really enjoy the songs, I have confidence that they would have bought the album when I got back, or have bought it on iTunes, Tidal, and so forth. Yeah.
Do you think people who are just starting out and going to open mics, do you think they should put their original stuff online as well?
I think so. But I think a lot of people who start doing that don't sort of write out the end goal. They don't write down what the standard of the videos they want to put out would be. I think I made that same mistake, but I did it anyway. I've been putting out videos since 2006 on YouTube. It's been a long time. Original music as well. So I suggest that they do, but sort of have a standard that you and a look that you want to put out and just have fun with it. Like, yeah. I think that's awesome.
And to close things off, you know, looking back from where you are today, what mistakes do you think you made in you know, going about in the local music scene, and what would you change?
I don't think we're ever ready for this business. I really don't. And you never really know what you should be and how this journey is supposed to go or where it's supposed to take you. I don't think I have any changes I want to make, but if there's something I could remind myself of now is to just keep going forward with this. Because there's nothing else I'm really good at. I really think it's just a matter of reminding yourself instead of looking backward.
So what advice would you give to people who are in your position 6-7 years ago, who are starting out and they're just starting the open mic circuit and they want to, you know, start a career?
I think I heard this line from this guy yesterday I was just hanging out with. He said, hustle begin hasil. And I thought it was a really cool line. I forgot who it was by. But I think that if I was at all qualified to give any advice, I would suggest that you just keep watching videos and keep trying to get yourself better at what you're doing. Repetition is key. Keep writing all your songs as much as possible. Do a song a day. It's the best thing I've ever done.
So that was the music of Christian Palencia, or The Last One Awake. You can find him on Facebook and YouTube as The Last One Awake, and his self-titled debut album, The Last One Awake, is out now on Spotify. Singer-songwriters have been around for decades, but a different type of musician emerged after the rise of the internet, the bedroom musician.
Should have known your history. Do this to me. All I wanna do is moving up. But goddamn, this boys are all the same. You switch boys like a switch.
switch lanes when you don't know how to give brains. I hate this disgusting, you flex lane. Don't pay tax, but you still claim. My friends, they're trying to warn me, but I'm stuck up and I'm desperate. I'll admit that you blame me, but I'm wide awake and I'm over it. Why are you guys stoop so low like this? Abusing my feelings like this. Why you guys stoop so low like this? Abusing my feelings like this.
Music is traditionally a collaborative process. Musicians get together, play off of each other's instruments and ideas, work with producers and labels, and eventually get their songs out in the world. But today, with accessible music software and computers, musicians don't necessarily have to do that. Music can be made by just one person. Alex TBH, which is millennial speak for Alex to be honest, is one of these bedroom musicians. With his soulful, chill R&B tracks, the 20-year-old musician started off making music in his bedroom and releasing them on SoundCloud, a free website where musicians can upload their tracks and get them heard. Today, Alex has over 300,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. Recently, he played Good Vibes Festival, a two-day music festival in Genting Highlands with local and international acts like Elifs, Najwa, The Cooks, and Phoenix. Mikael caught up with him after his Good Vibes set to talk about his musical journey and how he went from being a bedroom musician to playing a massive music festival.
How did you actually start out with the whole music thing? Did you gig or did you just put yourself online?
Put myself online. I came from a SoundCloud background. So, yeah, my ex broke my heart, so I just basically wrote a song right afterwards. I put it on SoundCloud and it got like, I remember when it had like 50 plays in a week, I was like ecstatic. I was like, oh, people actually listen to my stuff. And before you know it, like, people were just really accepting of my music, and I couldn't be more happier with that.
Yeah, like you said, you're a SoundCloud artist, and like today people stream music, right? And that's changed the way that we all listen to music. Do you think that has also changed how you make music, especially with how you find inspiration and like the things you listen to?
I'm not gonna lie, sometimes, yeah, often at times I do have the thought of wanting to make music that caters specifically to a Spotify playlist. Like, I really, really want my song to be in this highly subscribed playlist, so I want to make a song that caters to the playlist. But then I realize that I will lose like a huge part of my genuinity. So I always need to find a balance of like making sure that I make songs that I enjoy making, but at the same time, people will talk about and people will love, you know?
You also had your song put on a Spotify playlist. What was that like?
That was crazy. I was in Sarawak and I had this I always have this obsession of like going on the statistics, going through the stats and look through all my plays. And one day it just rose 20,000 counts and I'm just like, who the did this? And I realized, oh someone, Spotify, yeah, they put my song in a really huge R&B playlist. So it just went up ever since, just soared. So I'm really happy Spotify did that. Yeah.
Did you think that like actually really helped you take off?
Absolutely, it definitely elevated my career in a lot of sense. Like it's in retrospect, it does seem like pretty mundane. Like some dude from working for Spotify decides, oh, I really like this song, so I'm gonna put this in the playlist, and then he actually did. Like he probably didn't know how much impact he has on me right now.
Would you call yourself a bedroom musician?
Oh, absolutely. I make music, I mix, master, everything stems from the bedroom. Vocals.
Bedroom musicians only really became like a thing after the internet because of how accessible music became. Do you prefer being a bedroom musician or would you like to maybe collaborate more? Or
I definitely would love to be in a studio someday and really, really learn how the professionals do it, because there's only so much I can learn on my own. I definitely need some sort of a technical guidance, and all these stuff I've been learning on my own from YouTube tutorials and whatnot, that's the basis of being a bedroom producer. But I do want to go on studios and, you know, play with all the faders and knobs and have like a little, this cute little glass pane that separates the mixers from like the recording studio inside. Like, oh my god, yeah.
Do you think being like a bedroom producer, you know, just by yourself, has helped in like terms of finding your sound or learning things?
It's a really good question. When it comes to finding my sound, I do tend to try and be alone and really go in depth and see like what is wrong with me or what is right with me. And with that, I think the sound just naturally just, yeah, it just works.
You also mentioned that you learned a lot from like YouTube tutorials.
The thing about tutorials online on YouTube is that some of them can be really patchy.
Yeah.
And as in like, it's a hit or miss. Sometimes you get really good tutorials, sometimes you get bad, so you're gonna have to like learn and navigate through it. But some of the channels I would recommend is Point Blank Music School and You Suck at Producing. It's my favorite channel.
Did you learn like everything by yourself?
Yeah, ever since I had my first iPad and I fooled around with GarageBand. Yeah.
Tell me about the first time you actually made music.
Oh my god, I still have that song on YouTube. I will never release it. I'm just saying.
It's on YouTube?
No, it's private. It's private. I will never ever release it on YouTube, but it's just absolutely cringe-worthy. Oh, it was so terrible. It's like, it's basically a couple sets of like loops from GarageBand and it is made something out of it.
Yeah.
And it was, the lyrics are like so terrible, but if anything, I am very grateful that I did that because I mean, everyone has to start from somewhere.
Yeah.
And these days I have a lot of like up and coming musicians telling me like, oh, I really wish someday I could be like you. And I'm just like, you make songs that are way, way better than what I used to make. Like, trust me, if you listen to the songs that I make in 2012, you're not gonna like it.
You just came off of your Good Vibe set.
Yeah.
What's it like playing, you know, like a festival, especially being a bedroom musician? What's it like to go from the bedroom to like a festival set?
I always said that I wanted to attend Good Vibes. Little did I know I will attend Good Vibes as a musician, not as a... Yeah, but it's just really surreal. I'm like, oh, wow. Huh. Good Vibes talk to me and email me and like, oh, wow, this is really happening. I'm on stage and... It's just really surreal, and if anything, I couldn't be more humbled by the love and the support that people give.
You've posted before that you used to be really like nervous with live sets and it would be really hard on you. You posted on Instagram that, you know, you lost your passion for live sets, but you just played a festival set, you were on tour for a couple of weeks. Has that changed?
Absolutely, that changed a lot. I learned a lot, especially from my tour mates, Zamira. Zamira is just natural on stage. The way I looked at her, I look up to her a lot in terms of how she interacts with crowds, and she just has a really good charisma, and I learned a lot from her, and that's what I think I wanted to be as an end goal. I really want to interact with the crowd and just make the set really intimate and fun, you know. But yeah, it's humble beginnings.
Did you find it difficult, like, developing your style live and, like, your stage presence?
Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Because back then I was playing with a MIDI keyboard on stage and I realized I was kind of awkward up there.
Yeah.
And I feel way, way better if I were to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And just, like, hold a microphone and just sing. And because back then I was trying to go for this Muramasa-esque live set where I play everything on my own. But then I realized I sing too, and if anything right now, I'm just trying to showcase my vocals more than anything else.
Yes.
So I'm more comfortable picking up a microphone and just interacting with people than if I were to be playing a keyboard or any sort of instruments.
So last question, you've come a pretty long way from your bedroom to Good Vibes. What advice would you give to someone who was in your position, like when you were just starting out?
Don't give up. Please don't give up. I know that it's not as discouraging as before. Where I am from, it used to be quite discouraging to try and label yourself as a musician, but don't fret. Like, it's more vibrant than ever. The scene is so vibrant. There's so many people doing really crazy things. We have Day Kim, like experimental music, like chiptunes. We have like Airlifts. We have so many talented artists out there, and they're Malaysians, so just keep doing what you're doing. And my number one advice, although it's kind of a cliche, if you do make mistakes, learn to accept it. It took me a while to learn to accept it. Feelings like this.
That was Alex TBH speaking to BFM's Mikhail Hanafi about his career trajectory as a bedroom musician. You can find him online on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, SoundCloud and Spotify as Alex TBH. Earlier, you heard from Christian Palencia on The Last One Awake, sharing his background as a singer-songwriter. We've been exploring the Malaysian indie music scene, and after the break, we'll explore the world of busking. Stay tuned, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're listening to I Love KL, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and this week we're taking a look at KL's music scene and its diverse talents. Before the break, we spoke to Alex TBH and The Last One Awake about their music careers and how they both started. The two began making music in the era of the internet, but what about the more seasoned Malaysian musicians? Next up, we talked to musician, journalist, lecturer and freelance writer Azmil Yuno about how he got his start in music before the internet.
Down the interstate, now that's the old deal for you. There will be days when you wake up late and find there's nothing left to do. Rummaging through yesteryears like iron in the pleats on her skirt. There will be times when the words don't rhyme.
With a music career spanning over 20 years, Azmil Yuno is no newbie to the music scene. Ever since releasing his first collection of songs, Whatever, on cassette back in 1997, Azmil has been blazing a trail through the Malaysian music scene by being on the streets, busking. He has released 12 EPs and albums since with numerous different projects, composed scores for 6 films, written countless articles, hosted a show on BFM, and even lectures at Sunway University. Mikhail sat down with him to talk about how he built his career to where it is today and all the challenges he faced along the way.
So Azmil, how did you get started with music?
Well, I went to college in Subang. I liked music in school, but my classmates, nobody played music. When I went to college, it was a whole new world for me because I didn't live in Subang Jaya, Petaling Jaya. I wasn't in the urban center. So it was the first time I ever seen a jamming studio. So then my classmates were from Subang and we started jamming. And it just happened lah. Then started jamming, you know, learning equipment, getting your ears all like, you know, you don't know how to deal with volumes. So for me, it was always trial and error. That was mid-90s. Around 96, I left the country. So yeah. I wasn't here during like the interesting times. I missed that.
You were a student in Australia, right?
Yeah.
And when you were in Australia, you started busking.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that. What made you decide to start busking?
Okay. Well, because my band was happening. We even had a band name. They were called Damn Weather. But then I had to go. So, you know, I was there. I was writing songs. And I had always all these songs with my band in my mind. But I had all these songs. And I was alone overseas, you know. So I couldn't be bothered starting a band. So I had all these songs. One day walking around town, saw some buskers. Thought to myself, like, I think I can do better, man. But I didn't start busking right away. I needed a part-time job. I started playing part-time jobs left, right, and center. Nobody got back to me. So after a while, I thought like, okay, I saw those buskers. I found out information. You had to pay $1 a month. That's all. That was the permit. So that's it. I signed up. First time I played, I didn't even have a guitar. I just played with a tambourine. I stood there for 15 minutes just to get used to the idea. You know, I was like, standing public, you're open. You don't know who's going to be there, you know. But then, yeah, I started playing. It's good, actually. Good money.
So what were some of the biggest challenges when you first started out busking?
The challenges, I think, it's getting over your own self, really. That's the main thing, you're going out there. It is exciting. It is also quite daunting because you are really open to the elements. You don't know. We get robbed. But then started realizing there is this almost unspoken respect to buskers. Like, you don't mess around with buskers, apparently. But, of course, strangers coming up to you are very funny.
Yeah, it sounds like you've learned a lot from your experiences busking.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think it has influenced you in your current career as a musician?
Oh, definitely. I think not just a musician, but as a person too. I think it was a holistic experience. One of my sweetest memories of having an Aborigine family. They're walking through, there was an uncle, grandpa. So then they say, can I borrow your guitar? So, okay, sure. And then he sang an Aboriginal song. And then the grandpa started crying, very emo. I said, wow. And we put our arms together and sang along. I don't know, like it was some melody. And then like, all right. Then he gave Mike my guitar. I said, yeah, brother, you're good. He gave me money. And they weren't well off. These were like really like, I think, working class aborigines. So they were just passing through, you know. So yeah, eye-opening. I think I was probably the only Malaysian student that time to experience that, I think. Because everybody else is, why you do that, you know.
Yeah.
And stay away from that. You
know? Yeah, it's not a common experience.
Yeah.
So after you came back from Australia and you came back to Malaysia, how did you initially start to get serious about your music, you know, making it, recording it, producing it, and distributing your own stuff?
Okay. I was actually doing that already, honestly, like, parallel to that. While I was busking, I was I discovered, like, my friends in my band who were in Malaysia, they met up with another friend. They got together and they formed this noise band. They kind of, the punk scene kind of latched on to, it was more friendly. They were the friendliest scene to get into. So punk, I got to know the guys from there, guys like Joe Kidd and all the bands that were there. So they were telling me about this, email at times. Oh, okay, then they sent cassettes over to me. There was also this approach to recording, not just a genre known as lo-fi. Lo-fi basically just states that, you know, it is the format or the quality recording, doesn't matter, but it's just that you could record it on a recording cassette player. And you have a melody, and that should be as legit as a studio recording. And it shaped my way of thinking too when I produce my own music, is that for me, if a song is good, it'll come through, right? So I was starting making my own cassettes. And some of these cassettes ended up with our friend, Joe Kip. He had a column, he had a website, and he was the most welcoming to any sort of strange musicians who couldn't fit anywhere. So great. So through my friends, I did stop making cassettes. I kept on making it. Up to 2002.
So you started making cassettes. And this was obviously before the internet.
Yeah.
How did you get yourself heard? How did you put your music out there before the internet?
Okay. Actually, the internet was there. It was in its very formative stage. So you didn't record and there was MP3. It didn't exist. So the only thing I had was a website. But I think that's why people bought stuff more than now. Now it's kind of hard to convince people to buy. You know, some people's laptop, no CD player also. But, you know, if you enjoyed it, they buy it, like I said. So, I mean, the promo came with playing. And that was the thing that I observed too. Bands in Australia that were traveling, you tour because you're there to push a record. So you had something. So you needed that. I think that was quite important. And it also gave you a certain sense of discipline, focus, when you have an album. It was fun. You know, I wasn't doing like, I must get to the industry. You know, it wasn't, none of that was, it didn't bother me at all. It's really shot sendiri, as they say. And I was then doing it because I enjoyed it. Yeah. And turns out there are people who are appreciating it. So, baby steps.
Yeah. So you've released like 13 albums and EPs, both as, you know, just solo and with the bands that you've been in. You've composed scores for multiple movies. Mm. You've had quite a long music career. A lot of people see busking as like the first step, and then you move past busking once you get big. But, I mean, you still busk. Mm. What makes busking so special to you?
I like the anonymity of it. You're playing there and, you know, nobody knows you. They look at you and people are impressed. One of my local music heroes, Muir, he once said that, you know, busking is not just a career trajectory. It's a way of life. While you're busking, you're observing. That's another thing too. You know, you're seeing people, you're seeing society. Even though now, like if I play in a mall, I observe the society in a mall maybe, you know, it's not representative. But still, I think you are seeing the public. And that's what I really enjoy. Seeing strangers look at you and smiling, and it's like, yeah, enjoy that. You know, that's meaningful.
Is busking something you would recommend to new musicians?
Yeah, I would. One, it's humbling. Because like I said, when you get a stage, you get a spotlight, you know, you always feel like, yeah, you know, attention's all on me. But again, when you go busking, you know, you've got to, you know, nobody knows you probably. And again, you have to think about things about that you probably wouldn't think if you're playing on a stage. You know, like, again, a shtick, what kind of songs do you do? Do you banter? Because nobody's really listening. So that's another thing, you know. So, yeah, I would recommend it. They should. I mean, it's one of the many things you should do.
So buskers normally leave, like, containers or bags in front of them for people to leave money. Do you think busking is a viable source of income for musicians? Or is it more of a short-term thing and they need to find another source of income in the long term?
Well, I mean, like KL, there are a lot of full-time buskers now. It's gone kind of, like, big. But it's hard work. You know, busking. It's also, you got to think about if you're playing in the public, you know, it's also a health thing because, you know, if the tropics, you know, with the dust and the city, you know, that's another thing to think. It's viable as long as, I think, if you understand what you're going to do with it in the long term, but also not saying no to other opportunities. If, you know, you get opportunities to perform somewhere and get paid, why not? You know, so it's one of the, I would say, one of the many things you do.
So, I mean, you've been in the scene since the mid-90s. How much has it changed from your perspective since then until now?
Well, a lot, man. I think, well, I mean, you can actually gig and, you know, earn some pocket money, you know. It's quite happening. All these other things start cropping up, all these acoustic scenes, and I was organizing a bit here and there. Suddenly cafes open up and they open to this idea like, wow, yeah. So the thing about the music scene that's changed is that, yeah, I mean, it's become a viable way. If you choose to make it a career, you can.
What do you hope for the future of the Malaysian music scene?
I mean, one thing, the culture of audiences is a bit different here. I mean, the expectations, that's something still growing, I think. The fact that people don't understand that, you know, music venues or venues that have live music need to survive. In other words, you need to buy something, whether you buy food, drinks. And of course, there's a lot of exploitation going on, and that's endemic now. I mean, there are a lot of like marketing moves of, you know, right now I notice competitions. You don't have judges anymore. Everything is based on, okay, guys, you're in the top 10. There's 10 bands. Okay, we know we're based on how many likes you get. Then, well, then the band just goes on this online assault of like, guys, hi, please like. It's sad because I think that's exploitative. But I think audiences are changing. I think Malaysian audiences is not they're indifferent or don't care. It's more of a case they don't know. Music press is very important. And we don't have any music press anymore. All the magazines shut down because it's just not viable. The press is very important. The critiques. We don't have writers. We have talent, but the public doesn't know.
So what advice would you give to someone just starting out today?
Well, go out and play, man. Don't just record in front of YouTube. I had a lot of students in my uni. I mean, some of them are performers, but, you know, I tell them, hey, come to the gig, you know, it's like, check it out. Some of them never come. Some do. Some have YouTube channels, you know, it's like, I tell them, come play in front of some real people, man. Yeah, of course, on YouTube, people watching it real, but I said real as in like in the same space, you know, it's very different. But I would say that, you know, go play. Your music is also is a physical thing. When you play live, the sound, whatever it is, all that comes into being, right? So I say go and play. There's so much opportunity now. You know, in the past, we didn't have this opportunity. Now, you know, the world's your oyster, but you're not interested in the oyster. Well, it's your loss.
That was Azmil Yuno talking to us about his illustrious music career. You can find him on Facebook, Spotify, and on Twitter at Azmil. And earlier, we also spoke to Alex TBH and The Last One Awake. Though many people seem to ignore it, the KL music scene isn't something to brush off. As you've heard today, we have a huge amount of new music and musicians, many passionate about their art. Now you wanna go home, fall into her arms tonight. Now you wanna go home, fall into her arms tonight. Sadly, we've come to the end of the show. If you'd like to revisit the interview, head over to bfm.my/ilovekl or download our latest app via Google Play and the App Store. Also, follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharudin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.